It is Locked On Jazz for the 1st of April. No April Fools today, but some great memories in the old school sports radio of Salt Lake on those. We might touch on that. The offseason and how this all impacts it. Some very geeky threads on salary cap stuff and some more thoughts on the Vegas tournament idea. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan each and every day. Hope things are all right. It's a little different, obviously. I don't know what all right is, but staying together as a group and social distancing and hopefully healthy. Bunch of little news notes keep coming out every day. We're touching us on this first segment. And then in addition to that, Andy Larson will rejoin us for the final things. Then tomorrow we'll go live. So I look forward to talking to you tomorrow on a live show, answer your questions, hang out, chill, do all that kind of stuff. Chad Ford's new show is up and out. Make sure you go grab it. NBA Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. It's really quite good. So tune into that. Next week on the program, greatest seasons of Jazz history. We're going to do 1991-92. I'm researching it right now, loving it, totally engaged in this process. It's made me feel a million times better. So hopefully it'll be great and you'll like it. We're going to go back to 91-92. Then we'll probably do one of the final seasons and maybe even go back somewhere in the 80s. Salt Lake Tribune's been nice enough to give me access to their archives. They have great reporters back there, so I'm reading kind of all the old stories, finding old things. We'll talk to reporters in that era as well as we look back on those seasons. So hopefully that'll be really fun. That's next week on the program. Tell a few friends, and so everyone can be engaged in it and we can all share those kind of memories together. It's pretty fun. All right, so yesterday there was a story out of Toronto that the Toronto mayor is not allowing any public gatherings until the end of June. So if that's the case, the conversation we had yesterday about the Las Vegas concept really seems to begin to be the only concept that exists. You can't go, and I think we knew that, but this was just a reconfirmation. The chances of us coming out and playing NBA basketball again this year, where everyone's traveling and going to different cities that are all in different places and as hot spots continually are popping up, it just seems impossible. Maybe not, but it feels like it, right? Maybe it starts July 15th, we go back to normal, we travel like normal, and everything, the curve flattens and we can get in front of crowds. That seems hard for me to see. The general consensus on everyone is that the NFL will be the first people to play in front of fans. Like that they'll lead the way. Sports will lead the way back, by the way. That's what's going to happen here. It's kind of what always happens. Sports and big events will lead the way back. And they'll probably be, I was talking to my parents about this last night, we're both in their 80s, and my dad is on the board of a ballet company in San Francisco. And he was like, do you think people are going to gather? And I said, I think it's going to have to do with your age and your health. Like, I think 80-year-olds may not gather anymore for a while. And people with health issues may not gather for a while. I mean, I don't know. I'm no expert on this, but it was just a thought. So it does seem as though that Vegas aspect of things is most likely. And then we get into that kind of conversation that I brought up, which was, you know, does the players union do it? Well, as we brought that up, then Woj reports yesterday about the clause in the contract that the NBA can institute where they're bringing money back. And they're going to do this not to hold money back. This is really complicated and geeky, but it actually helps them prevent wild cap fluctuations. One of the bigger problems other than just getting games on the floor for the NBA is with all this revenue change and loss of revenue, we could end up with these major, major cap swings, which could cap spike and bring the cap down to, in theory, as low as $85 million from 109 or 115. And they'll work. There's clauses in the contract so that it won't work that way because the players union and the ownership can come together. Now, last time they tried to do this, they didn't come together. But I think on this one, the circumstances are different and they'll be able to do it. But there's about 25% of player salaries. It's still out there. So when we start talking about whether or not the players are willing to be quarantined for a period of time in Vegas, and that's the way Woj is talking about it, is though it's quarantined in Vegas in a hotel, and then they turn like ballrooms, or if it's at Mandalay Bay, they have gyms, and they turn them into basketball arenas, and there's no fans, and so you're just playing, and then it's televised out of there on kind of the way they do world feeds out to every market, then, you know, are the players, I brought up the point, like, are players willing to do that? Well, you know what? Like, if it's the, if the issue is 25% of your salary, then I'll bet most players are willing to do it. That's a lot. The league, the urgency for the league, like, I'm sure there's some of you that are listening and saying, ah, just let it go. Like, and I get that. You start to walk through this. If we don't play another game, and Albert Namahada, let's see, is that how you pronounce it? Namahed, who does a bunch of work with the Heat, is the kind of this incredible salary guy. You know, he breaks it down and points out, like, somewhere between, like, between gate receipts and merchandising and all those kind of things, you know, you're talking about $500 million in gate receipts. You're talking about 84 playoff games, which is probably $250 million in gate receipts. And he's using round numbers. And then you add in the merchandising, and you're talking somewhere between $1 billion and $1.3 billion of loss on an $8 billion industry. That's 21%. That's about what the season is missing, too. I mean, that's how you're extrapolating out the math. Well, you suddenly lose 21% of your revenue, and the league has to get into the, for every, like, 1.3, for every 100 million you lose in revenue, you're losing about 1.5 million on the cap. Right? So that's his, and then when you hit the 500 million mark, you're actually missing about, losing about 3.2 million because of some other things. I don't want to bore you with it. They're like, if this just goes forward and they don't play, you could have a cap drop of like $20 million. Well, that screws everything up because then it spikes again the next year. Free agents this year would not be able to get anything. They'd all want one-year contracts so they could get something the next year. There's a real ramification to all of that that is truly significant. And I think has to be something, you know, obviously it's not on the forefront right now, but from a basketball standpoint, it's why we've kind of walked through this. It's pretty clear the way you're going to go back and play is you're going to do something in a singular spot. Vegas seems to be the most logical singular spot. And then why would everybody be motivated to do something that's crazy? Well, this is why. Like, $1 to $1.35 billion, each player 25% of their contract, salary cap, and long-term lingering after effects of it. That's how you end up getting that done. That's why. So the league's going to avoid, the league's so good, they're going to avoid that process. Side note, I don't know, I just wanted to share, there was a lot of this and that about the Miller and the Gobert thing. You know, we have six broadcast assistants that work for me. They work part-time, hourly. They all just lost their gigs. A bunch of them had restaurant gigs, they lost their gigs, so it's tough. I got notified last night that they'll be taken care of on the Miller, Gobert package. It's incredible. Like, it's just incredible. And the fact that the Millers are actually donating in this is amazing because their companies have no revenue right now. And so that's, you know, this is a, I don't want to get into all this stuff, but like the one thing I've read a lot of like quick Twitter things like, well, why aren't the owners of every single one of these companies to some extent are making their donations by paying payroll. And it's impressive. And the Philadelphia 76ers got hammered, I know, and you know, they didn't do that very well, but, you know, still. So for the Millers to be involved in this is amazing. And for Gobert to be involved is amazing. And then for them to be taken care of, you know, it's just great to see. So, you know, I just really, a major tip of the hat to the Miller family and all that are involved in what they're doing on this. It's very impressive. It's very hard. And they're doing the right things. And I'm super impressed by all aspects of those items. All right. Andy Larson and I will talk a bunch of basketball here, how the Jazz could beat the Lakers and Clippers in the fantasy land that we get to do that at some point in time. And those kind of matchups and Rudy Gobert's incredible season and all sorts of things coming up on the program. Two companies that are just doing amazing things right now. One of them is Sarah over at Sunprint Solutions. Sunprint Solutions is a really, really interesting company. Sarah and her partner own it. It's Utah-owned. They are basically the leaders in all print solutions. They've done Zions Bank. They've done stuff for the Utah Jazz. They couldn't tell me what. It's a Utah company, and they have done amazing things right now to keep themselves up, viable, and working for to make sure that companies that right now still need their marketing dollars and need their work get it done. And they have huge space. They've instituted shift changes, just incredible creativity. I so admire those kind of people who are doing those, you know, that kind of work. They have 88 employees. They're able to stagger their shifts. They are doing amazing, amazing work at Sunprint Solutions. So direct marketing is vital right now. So direct mail marketing, you can get that done. They've done a lot of printing for restaurants, letting people know they're open via DoorDash and takeout delivery. They've printed mortgage companies, letting them know they can still get lower interest rates. They'll do folding carton boxes, flyers, books, brochures, mailers, folders, coupons, much more. Sunprint Solutions. Call Sarah 801-978-5601. That's 801-978-5601. Also, Sarah at Sunprint Solutions. She's S-A-R-A at sunprintsolutions.com. Another day with Andy Larson, so appreciative of his time. Great conversation about Donovan the other day. I go back to one of the things I think has been most interesting about this season is, it's actually a conversation I had with someone at a coffee house, and we were at Campos, and they said, well, what do you think about this season, and what do you think the biggest challenge will be? And I said, I think your biggest challenge, the biggest challenge for the Jazz will be to get everyone to play hard. And they kind of looked at me like, well, what are you talking about? And I was like, you know, this roster's always had guys on the roster who played hard, because if they didn't play hard, they went home, right? Like, they weren't so frankly, if Ricky Rubio doesn't play incredibly hard with his shooting, he goes home. And Jay Crowder goes home. And other guys go home. And that's how Joe Ingles was when he got in the league, but he's now made it. So he goes home now. He goes home with $15 million a year. It's just a different spot in your career. And this roster didn't have anyone on it that was got to play hard or you go home guy.
Yeah, I worry about that too with, you know, first of all, Jeff Green didn't play hard and then went home. So you had that.
And that clearly changed a great deal, right?
Yeah. And I think before that, you had guys who weren't playing hard. And I think that matters. You know, you're trying to get to the highest level of play hard, I guess, that you want. But I also think Royce O'Neal, after the extension, and I don't know how fair this is really, because it is a small sample size, but after he got signed to the extension, I think that there was a drop off on the defensive end, and you know, maybe it's not just from Royce, but I think the team struggled there as well. But you know, maybe it was like, hey, I'm not an undrafted guy anymore. Now all of a sudden I'm guaranteed $40 million, and if I my play does drop off, I'm gonna be fine. I have $40 million. I think there was a lot of that. You know, I think Mike Conley, as much as he wanted his place on the Jazz secure, is financially secure. Donovan Mitchell is going to be fine. Rudy Gobert, I think, you know, to some extent, I guess, is playing for his next deal after the end of next year, but was kind of concerned about his role in the offense and how he fits in on this new and more offensively powerful Jazz lineup. You know, I think kind of for all of these guys, or at least many of them, I think there were reasons that they should feel secure about their careers at least. And yeah, I think that based on kind of how the team fared in the playoffs for the last 3 years, there was a sense that it was really going to only be the playoffs that mattered, and what happened in the first and second rounds were going to determine how this team was viewed and how And so I think there was maybe less regular season urgency than we've seen from a Jazz team, you know, really since probably the end of the Deron Williams.
And frankly, if you look at the Clippers, they don't have a lot of guys that have to play hard. You look at the Lakers, you know, this is not uncommon to really good teams. But if you go back to what I thought was a really good conversation about Donovan in our show yesterday or earlier this week, depending on when we air this, because we're taping this on Sunday, no need to hide that, I thought that conversation, we kind of ran out of time, but I thought that conversation was really revealing in just how young everyone still is, right? So, I mean, right. I get it. Everyone built this team, and I did it too. I ran my models. I thought they'd be the number one offensive team in the league, and the question was whether they could still be top 10 defensively, and ironically enough, I'd argue that's still the same question today. But you go look at who they're competing with for to be this next level. Like, LeBron's in his 17th season with Anthony Davis, who is in his 8th, right? Kawhi Leonard has a championship belt. He's got a chit. He's in his 9th season. Paul George is in his 10th season, I believe. Denver's the other team that's probably most similar to Utah when you have Jokic in his 5th season, Jamal Murray in his 4th, and they show a lot of the same characteristics. Houston, who's kind of all over the map, but Harden's in his 11th season and Westbrook's in his 12th. Like, we're asking Donovan in his 3rd season to be better than and beyond these guys that have a decade of experience in that, I think, became evident to me throughout the year how big an ask that really is.
Well, I guess I'll turn it around then, Locke, and say, like, should the third year and sixth year guys and some of the unproven talent on, I guess not unproven, but younger players on this team be more motivated than the 17-year NBA veteran LeBron James or the 11th-year veteran Russell Westbrook or the 12th-year veteran James Harden?
I think this is what you learn from year 3 to year 7 in the league. I'd have to talk to players who know, but like, I think what you learn is, how do I migrate through a year? How do I keep my energy level up? How do I work? You know, I still think it's interesting how much Donovan, and I've talked to him about this, how much he's still dealing with everything for the first time, right? First time to ever be an all-star. How do you react to that? First time playing with another ball handler. First time. There's just so many different aspects that in your third year of the NBA, you're still, and even the AT&T Sportsnet replays have kind of reminded me of that. It's just, there's still so much new to him along the way. I guess that's a little bit of my point, is this, what they're experiencing is not that different than what all the best teams in the league experience, but it's new to us. You know, who are those young guys that need to prove themselves? We actually, maybe George Niang, and I'm not sure. Other than that, there's not really a rotation player that has to prove himself anymore.
Right. I would say Moutier too, but he's found himself out of the rotation by the end, right? And so Tony Bradley clearly, I guess, needs to prove himself. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I don't think that there was like a huge level of urgency throughout the season. I think that showed itself pretty clearly in certain stretches. I mean, losing to Toronto in the first half by 40 points is a clear sign of that, right? But even kind of some of the four-game losing streaks that we saw this team go on, immediately after the All-Star break returns, you know, I think there were – I'm not a huge, like, mental and motivation guy as a way to explain performance, but when you have a team that goes on a 5-game losing streak immediately after returning from the All-Star break, like, I guess it was a 4-game losing streak, but you honestly feel, when all those games are at home, it felt pretty clear what was happening there.
So if we go back to December 24th, the shakedown in Miami, as I like to call it, right? You take a veteran in Jeff Green and you just send him home. Pretty stunning move, right? Like, really kind of unheard of.
Yeah.
You take Ed Davis out of the rotation. You move George Niang and you acquire Jordan Clarkson. Like, if there wasn't a shock to the system, like, wow, these guys were all sitting around on Christmas going, oh my. Since then, they're the number one offense in the NBA by a decent margin, by the way. Dallas Mavericks are the best offensive team in the history of the NBA, and Utah's 1.2 points better than Dallas since that day, and they're 2.2 points better than the third best offense in the NBA. They're 23-11, and their net differential is fifth best in the NBA, third best in the Western Conference. Is that fair to who they are? Is that a fair representation, or do you think that's too generous, or what's your thought?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're the best offense of all time. you know, basically I'm going to slow down there, but I do think that they are probably a top three, top five level offense. And then I do think that they can be much better defensively than what we've seen over that stretch. I mean, that's kind of the problem, right? Is even as world-beatingly good as they've been on offense, the defense has not been anywhere close to kind of the Quinn Snyder standard. And I think that to me is where you still have some optimism about this team and say, look, if you can play like you did offensively over the last 3 months, or I guess 2.5 months, then you're great, right? Like, you are a problem in the playoffs. And then you need to be as good, you know, maybe not a top three team defensively like you were the last 3 years, but if you can be a top five, top 10 team defensively, then you're an elite team. Then you're a problem. You're not only a problem for, you know, the Oklahoma City teams of the world, but you're a problem for the Los Angeles Clippers and the Los Angeles Lakers and even like the Milwaukee Bucks, who are maybe one of the best teams in NBA history. But like, if you are a top five offensive and defensive team, then you're very special. And I think that's what kind of makes this season both encouraging and frustrating, is that we never got the chance to see them play well offensively and defensively at the same time for more than maybe one or two games in a row.
They're the 11th best defensive team in the league since that date, or no, for the season.
And yeah.
Since that date, they're 18th. What I find hard is there's just been a lot of, again, a little bit of this veteran aspect of this team. There's just been a lot of games where they've played just enough defense, right? The offense was churning. They got done what they needed to, and they played just enough. It's the same thing. On, you know, the sample size is small. The one reason I think you might be right on saying, hey, back down on the number one offense in the league, they didn't play Milwaukee in that stretch. They played one game against Toronto. They didn't play the Lakers in that stretch. They played one game against Boston, one game against Clippers, and they didn't play Philadelphia. So the top six defenses in the NBA, they only have played three games when they elevated that offense to the number one in that time period. It makes it interesting. All right, we'll talk about how I do like, as we wrap up with Andy Larson this week, how I do like where they sit in the sense of if you're moving forward, if we don't play again, or things of that nature. And it goes actually back to watching the Lakers and the Clippers in that great game, if you recall it, before all this went down, which was clearly the two best teams in the Western Conference going head-to-head in a masterful game. And we'll talk about that. If you didn't catch it on Monday, Chad Ford's new podcast is out, Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. Make sure you subscribe to that or follow it on Spotify, all part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My buddies over at The Store have been doing remarkable things, keeping stocked. They're independent, so they're able to get really, really creative in what they have been doing. The Store is located 6200 South in 20th East, as well as located in at the Gateway. All of our local markets are the ones, you know, our local people are the ones getting hit here, and they're super important to us. So they're continuing to support them in such fabulous ways. And then the other aspect of things that I really just am impressed by is all of the work that they've put in to keep various things in stock and keep their local dealers in stock as well. Right there, it's interesting how this works, right? So they're able to get regular deliveries of essentials like eggs, meats, ground beef, chicken, and keep prepping their regular meals, put them in their freezers, their enchiladas, their lasagnas, their chicken pot pies, a favorite. Their Instagram account continues to be updated. Because of the fact they're not tied to a corporate warehouse, they can use every supplier available to them. So The Store have done a masterful job of keeping everything in stock. That's 600 South 20th East. They're still making mudslide cookies. They're just a little, you have to now get them differently. All those little changes. And also located down at the Gateway as well, right across from the Children's Museum. It's The Store, 6200 South and 20th East, as well as the Gateway. Stop on by. Going back to that Lakers-Clippers game, seems like a long, long time ago, Andy. They were great. Like, I don't know if you watched that, but I watched that game and I was thinking, wow, the Jazz, just no way. And then I paused and was like, you know what? The Jazz beat them because they're the number one catch and shoot team in the league. And they just they get hot offensively for two or three games in the series. And the the Clippers or Lakers don't, and you end up in a game seven, and you just never know. And like, it wasn't like, hey, they're clearly not the favorite, and I'm not sure I would possibly say that they could ever beat them, but it was interesting to me that this team built offensively rather than being built defensively, I could write the script. Whereas last year, when we played the Rockets, and I took a lot of heat for this, I was like, there's no chance. There's just no chance. We don't have the offensive capability, even if we play well defensively and slow them down, to match them. Whereas this time I was like, wait a sec, we can actually be just as good as they are offensively. You got every guy on the rotation shoots over 38% on catch and shoot threes. Like, you get the ball moving, you get penetrating, you get some things going, you figure out their flaws, you can start knocking down a bunch of shots, and you might be able to get these guys. And not like you could get your favorite or anything, but there was a script to it. And I didn't feel like in the years past, when this was the defensive built team, that there was that script.
Well, and I also think that there are, I think the Lakers are maybe more difficult for the Jazz to imagine beating, just because their length, I think, would present real problems for them in terms of getting those catch and shoot threes and getting clean looks. I think against like the Clippers, the Rockets, Denver, any of those teams, I think the Jazz can kind of do what they do against. And I don't know that they have a lot of counters. As much problems as the Jazz have had against the Rockets, and I do think that's real. The Clippers and Nuggets, especially, I think the Jazz can play their game. And I don't know that they would be favored in those series, but I think the Jazz would have a chance because, you know, I think the Jazz might have more answers for what those teams do offensively than maybe the other way around.
It does also, to me, like the structure of the team now, with maybe you decide it wasn't quite good enough defensively, maybe you decide it was a little small, like didn't have the length, you can actually make, Justin Zanuck, Dennis Lindsay in the front office can make adjustments to the roster as it sits today, much more subtly than what they could have done a year ago. They actually had to alter the entire complexion of the team, which is what they did in the offseason. And now I feel like they can fiddle a little bit and try to figure out what the right matches are to just get those little incremental amounts better.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have a ton of assets, right? Like, they won't have any free agent space. So you're talking about basically using the mid-level, using the biannual exception, and then kind of making whatever trade, using your first-round pick, I suppose, and doing whatever deals you can around the edges to make that work. But, I do actually think that would make a substantial difference for a lot of the season. The bench was a huge problem. And, I think you're right that you can go out and look at the mid-level and say, okay, you know, who can we get for roughly $10 million a year that will provide, some maybe length and athleticism or whatever it is. Maybe you feel like you need a better backup center. Whether you feel you need a defensive stopper kind of player, whatever that is that you feel like you need in this class, it's not a great free agent market, but I do think there are like a small number of role players that you think that may be able to make a difference.
It's an interesting game, right? Because you've built this brilliant shooting team, and then you want to go get an athlete, so you go get like Mo Harkless, and he can't shoot, right? Like, this is like, I always love, like, I listen to, and hey, I did plenty of talk radio. I listen to a bunch of people, and they'll talk about, well, you just got to go get some really athletic, wing defender who can shoot. I'm like, well, that's an all-star, right? Like, that's an all, like, if you can do both, you're an all-star. So it's an interesting game that the Jazz right now, that the Jazz kind of talked about here, which is, the Jazz kind of went through, which is, okay, our margin of error is now going to have to be is wider on the offensive end, and our route to success defensively is much more shallow than it once was. And that's and I think that was hard for everyone to understand for this season.
I agree. And I think what you really kind of want is like basically versatility there, right? Like, so you either, you know, like the Clippers have Landry Shamet, and they also have, who's going to be my go-to defender on their team?
It's not going to be Lou Williams.
Patrick Beverley. Not Lou Williams. but, you know, you kind of have the choice to be able to do what you want. I don't know that the Jazz have, you know, I guess they do have Royce O'Neal, which is great. And, you know, I think he will start playing to his potential defensively a little bit. I think that's kind of important. But You know, I think clearly they need there are just questions that I don't know that Quinn Snyder can have all the answers for right now. And I think that's a little bit tough. And I think, you know, you'd like someone to be able to play situationally if you need it. What I think is tricky about that, though, is NBA rotations, for the most part, are pretty set. You know, like you don't see situational, you don't see like platooning in the NBA that often, right? You don't see a guy play 30 minutes one night to stop one matchup and then not play the next night. So, so I think as a result, yeah, if you put in a Mo Harkless kind of guy, you're going to just see, you're not going to be the number one shooting team in the league anymore, right? Like, so you have to decide whether or not that's worth it.
I think Rudy's still unbelievable.
He's still the best player on the team.
The league's changed, and so it's really, really hard to get shots at the rim, led by Milwaukee and other teams, and he still is the league leader in dunks. He's still getting those shots at the rim. There's like four centers in the NBA that actually can do this. Like there's and they're strange, right? They're Hassan Whiteside and they're Mitchell Robinson and they're I'm forgetting somebody off the top of my head, but they're actually the amount of centers that actually can roll to the rim and catch a pass above the rim for a dunk, which sounds like such a basic, easy thing to do, are very few. It's actually a skill that, you know, there are not happening very often. I'm actually can't find my fourth. Rashawn Holmes is my fourth guy, like who's done it a lot this year. They're strange players. And then none of those guys, Hassan Whiteside, Rashawn Holmes, or whatever innocuous other center I mentioned, Mitchell Robinson, have a defensive impact yet that Rudy has.
Right. And yeah, I mean, there really is no one in the league like Rudy. I mean, I guess the closest thing is it's really like Anthony Davis is a little bit like Rudy plus a little bit, but obviously you pay Anthony Davis the supermax. I think Rudy Gobert is deserving, of a maybe a regular max deal, but I don't think you can like give him the supermax extension where it's 5 years and 35% of the cap. And, you know, you look at how old he's going to be at that point and you don't know how the league is going to change. And you're really locking into, you know, what has been a 50 win core for the next, you know, 5 years. It's just, for me, I think from what I understand of the front office's thinking, I just don't see them locking into that huge percentage of the salary cap for that long, knowing what the downside could potentially be. And you know, that's not unfair to Rudy. I think he's one of the top 15 players in this league. I think he's terrific. And they're just, it really is that 35% of the cap is so much that I think it's really probably four or five players in the league that are really worth it.
What's the best team you saw this year?
The best team I saw in person was the Lakers. We obviously saw the Bucks. I was at both of the Jazz Bucks games and that's a very, very good team. But I thought that performance where the Lakers came in and just smashed the Jazz, was nearly unstoppable. And, I think basically as good as the Bucks were, and, you know, they were, again, one of the top five teams, on pace to be one of the top five teams in NBA history. I think the Lakers' level of talent blew me away in a way that maybe the Bucks didn't.
Yeah, all right, final question for the guy who's covering the Jazz and COVID-19 for the Salt Lake Tribune. You and I talk on July 1, so April, May, June, 3 months from now, 120 days. What's happened?
A lot of people have died, so that's not great. I think we have, at that point, established whether or not basketball will return, but I don't think that it has yet on July 1st.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, I look at the numbers of how this thing is recovering, and I just think that we're talking about 2 months before we get people together. And then I think, you know, we're looking at like a 2 week training camp or whatever that is. But I mean, if we release these podcasts at the beginning of April, 3 months away, that's where we're at, is like amping up to a season to begin. I just think that this is not a short-term problem that we're facing.
And the timing on that gets tough. You're finished. If you're doing that, like you, August, like you need, if we haven't started yet by July 1, you're not finishing till October.
Well, I don't think you're playing all the remaining regular season. I think basically you come up with a playoff, maybe a short ramp up, a shorter playoff. I don't know if that's a 3-game series or a 5-game series or what that looks like. And you honestly begin the 2020-21 season probably on Christmas Day or you know, late November, early December, something like that. But I don't think that if you do want to finish this year, and I think that makes sense for the NBA, I think they're going to sacrifice the timing for next season in order to play more games this season rather than just have it be a clean slate.
He's Andy Larson. Read him in the Salt Lake Tribune. Please subscribe and support the Salt Lake Tribune if you can. Local media, local coverage, so very important. I'll give a tip of the hat to the Park Record out here, is doing a great job in Summit County as well.
Yeah.
So thank you to them. Please support your local medias, your local restaurants, all these things. It's, you know, this is not a short-term problem, as Andy said, everyone's going to need their support the best they can. We know a lot of you are having a hard time. We're trying to support you the best we can by giving you something other than this to talk about. So we hope you enjoyed the basketball conversation. Andy, thanks so much for your time. I super appreciate it. It's been a fun week. Thursday edition of Locked On NBA is out. Friday edition of Locked On NBA. We put out a whole week worth of content for you. So go tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NBA.